And it's like, how do I know that my vote was counted accurately? You know, it's the type of question that the public is going to have. Responding to that question, what's the know-how that we have? What are the procedures that we have today that we can use to explain, answer that question? So it has to come, the question has to come from the public.
The full and free exercise of our sacred right and duty to vote is more important in the long run than the personal hopes or ambitions of any candidate for any office in the land.
You're listening to High Turnout, Wide Margins, an insider's look at election administration hosted by Brianna Lennon and Eric Fay.
Welcome to another episode of High Turnout, Wide Margins. This is Brianna Lennon. I'm the county clerk for Boone County, Missouri. And with me is my co-host,
Eric Fay, director of elections in St. Louis County, Missouri.
And today we're really excited to be talking to
Tommy Gong, chief deputy clerk recorder for Contra Costa County in California.
So Tommy, usually we start off with a how did you get into elections, but you've got a really interesting background. So we want to know even more than how you got into elections. We want to know a little bit more about yourself, your background, and your career and how it's progressed and how it ultimately ended up in elections.
Oh, great. So, yeah. So when I was growing up, you know, and we were the only Chinese family in kind of a agricultural land in California, in the Central Valley. And, you know, so you're always looking for, you know, heroes, you know, on TV or so. And at the time, the only one was Bruce Lee because he was on the Green Hornet show. And my sister, my big sister, who's 9 years older than me, you know, she falls in love with Bruce Lee and all. You know, then he makes it to Hong Kong and he's in the films there. And, you know, then, of course, he dies tragically. And so, you know, he was a childhood hero because of his movies and all. And so when I went to Cal, I had the opportunity to actually learn his martial art and got to a point where I think it's just part of my nature that I'm really curious about, you know, meeting people who knew him and, you know, just like even my elections career kind of goes the same route, meeting as many people as I can, learning from them and all. So I like basically met and learned from practically every student of Bruce Lee's. And as a result, then I was asked to serve on the Bruce Lee Foundation board that was founded by Linda Lee, his widow, and their daughter, Shannon Lee. It was so amazing when you met the ones who say, well, I only teach what Bruce taught me. So, you know, I proposed doing a book where I would work with each of these students to document what the training was and what he taught them. So that book is 10 years old. I worked on that book in 2012 during that presidential election. And so I was like writing like crazy every waking hour I could, you know, in the morning, at lunchtime, after work. And I'm doing a book right now about Bruce with his last student. And so as I finished up that book, I actually met his last student and we started to talk a lot over the years. And so he really wanted to write his book. And I said, okay, let me help you, you know, put some thoughts together and we'll start writing that out. And he has a really interesting history because he's from Hong Kong. He speaks the same Cantonese dialect as Bruce. So they really got along. He hung around with Bruce a lot when Bruce would be teaching like James Coburn and, you know, travel up to his home or to Steve McQueen. And so what's happened is like I've served on the Bruce Lee Foundation board and all in probably starting in around 2000s or so. And so it's really kind of come full circle for me because, you know, Bruce Lee was a childhood hero for me, studied his martial art, and now kind of responsible for his legacy and what that means for future generations, trying to, you know, continue that legacy. So it's just kind of cool to be involved in that process.
And here, I only thought you were famous because of your election work. So all these things.
It's funny when I Google myself, I say, well, what's the top headline? Is it the book or is it something about elections? So the time when I resigned my post in San Luis Obispo, obviously that was at the very top of the search results. You always wonder what your life is defined by.
So, how did you get involved in elections in the first place? I know you have a very illustrious career that you can take us through.
So I guess where I have to start that with is with the 2000 election. You know, of course, the 2000 election is a watershed moment for elections, you know, across the country. And I wasn't in elections at that time, but I was glued to the TV to see what the results of the election was, you know, who our president was going to be and what was happening in Florida and what was happening at the Supreme Court. And it was really an intriguing, you know, experience that was happening in the country. And only but a year or two later, I was looking for a new career. My family and I were in the family business. I grew up in the family business, and I was took it over in the 90s. And actually, I thought I was going to retire like my folks as a groceryman. And that didn't happen. You know, when you have a large change starting to take over communities and all, that was my opportunity to get out. And I didn't want to stay in any type of grocery business. So I was looking for a new career. And, you know, looking at, you know, just looking at the classifieds, I see this job for elections manager. And I said, oh, you know, and it was fresh in my mind about that 2000 election. So, you know, come on, elections, you know, what does that take? The job couldn't be that difficult. And so I applied, and I was lucky that the newly elected clerk recorder was really making an effort to hiring some new blood, some folks from outside of the government, outside of the local government. And so, and I came with, you know, management experience and an MBA. And so she hired me, and I was just really fortunate in that way, cutting my teeth there in Stanislaus County, which is in the Central Valley, Modesto area. So that's where I landed first. And but then I was seeking other opportunity. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to advance further. And so, you know, it's funny, you know, you kind of talk to the vendors kind of know, like, who's retiring? And I wanted to, you know, I was seeking mentorship. I wanted to find someone who I could really learn my craft from. And so out of the blue, they said, well, San Luis Obispo has a person named Julie Rodewalt. She's been there for about 16 years or so. And she really knows her craft. And I didn't know about her as much because she was a little bit further south. Then there's kind of like this dividing line, Northern California, Southern California. And so I went to meet Julie, and Julie, you know, expressed my interest. And so sure enough, she hired me for her newly created position of assistant county clerk recorder.
So California is a large state, and obviously that can present some interesting challenges. I'm curious what you've run into in your work, how you and your office have overcome them, and if you've got any advice for others on how to handle unique challenges.
We're always problem solving. Always something's coming up that we're looking to, you know, to implement a new law, a new curve ball that's thrown at us. And that curve ball for me in San Luis Obispo was in 2020. We had an early primary March election in the 2020 election. So COVID had not really, you know, been prevalent yet at that time. And, you know, it was only like a day or two after that March, I believe it was March 3rd, that it really started to take shape. And so we were able to conduct the election. We did have to take some safety precautions, but still things were so early and nobody really knew what was happening. So we were able to complete our canvas. But in so doing, then I was like really watching to see the primaries that are happening in other states and the cancellations of poll workers and the polling places and, you know, the long lines that were happening as a result. The increased number of absentee requests that, you know, states that are don't have the infrastructure for that type of volume. How are they able to keep up and fulfill those requests and to process that number of absentee ballots that are returning? So it was really becoming a concern in California as we're watching it on the sidelines. So the Secretary of State, in their wisdom, started to facilitate weekly or actually multiple calls during the week. And this started up in April. And we were really talking through, like, broke it down in by topic, like, how are we going to handle in-person voting? What type of safety procedures might we do here? What are some changes that you guys might request so that we can actually get through this for the November election? The governor's office is listening. They're ready to make some concessions and some changes for us to be able to safely conduct the election. And so what resulted was that they were going to send every registered voter a ballot in the mail automatically. In California, you have what is known as a permanent vote by mail status, where only, you know, you'll get a ballot by request every election automatically. You don't have to request it every election. So just wholesale, everyone's going to receive a ballot in the mail. And so you want to have the technology there to be able to check on the status of the voter's vote by mail. And given that it wasn't returned, then you can suspend that ballot and then the voter can vote in person. And so we had to make a major investment in technology, in equipment for our, I believe it was 18 locations in San Luis Obispo versus our 75 polling places, which is typically what we would have. You know, there was so much effort that was going in. There was a lot of community effort. I realized that I was going to have to really up my game in terms of outreach and education. It's not something we really did hardly ever in San Luis Obispo. So I made it a conscious effort that, okay, I am really going to have to get out there, explain to the public what's going to be different.
So what kind of impact did all of that have on your turnout?
At the end of the day, you know, we had the highest turnout we've ever had, and it was 88.65%. I was trying to find a metric because, of course, every county had an increase in turnout, of course, right? So I was trying to find, well, what metric could I find how we might have done better than our counterparts in California? So I looked at, like, how did we place in the order of, you know, from highest to lowest in turnout. And I looked at past data too. So typically San Luis would finish around 11th or 12th compared to previous elections. And we leapfrogged to like third or fourth place. So we were doing something that, you know, illustrated that, you know, we had an increase in turnout, and I attributed it because of all of the outreach and education we were doing. And so it was just really fascinating. And I considered it a real success with all of the effort that had gone into it. So after the election was over, you know, we were done, certified and all. And, you know, January 6th happens, of course. And it was starting in February that we had a lot of observers of the election observing what we were doing in our office and all. But starting in around late February, March, I had a request from our local Republican Party allowing them to perform a forensic audit on our ballots from the 2020 election. You know, vetting it through with our county council, with our Secretary of State's office, it's like, no, none of this is allowed, you know, because your election is certified and it shall remain, you know, stored and untouched for 22 months unless you have a court order. And, you know, they weren't happy to hear that. And so then became this email campaign, you know, urging me, and it's just kind of like this form email. Click on this button and I get automatically sent this email. The next thing I know, driving, you know, to work one morning, and it's on the radio show, you know, Tommy Gong does not care about your elections, you know, and doesn't care about elections integrity. And it's like, wait, you know, what, you know, it's just like takes you aback and, you know, makes you a little angry as well. Came to a head when we had a Board of Supervisors meeting for a presentation of the 2020 election and what we're considering doing going forward. It became a marathon public comment affair with many recorded and many, you know, live comments. At the end of the day, you know, it starts, you know, you kind of see the mob mentality that's going on. And my at some point, someone who, you know, joined the bandwagon to, you know, make a comment and, you know, say a few things, you know, I wonder if Tommy Gong is a secret member of the Chinese Communist Party. And so it was like, what? And it was really kind of like shocking. You know, I didn't know how to react to this first. And, you know, it was really, you know, kind of insulting. You know, I'm a third generation American. You know, my grandfather arrived here. My parents, my mother was born here. And so it was like, I haven't even stepped foot in China. Don't speak the language. And so, you know, I'm as American as can be in that way. And so it just was really kind of taken me aback. And in reflection, you know, like you try to like put this all together, it's all happening so quickly. At the same time, I realized there was some, you know, the violence that was happening against Asian Americans. And so in the back of my head, I was like, you know, if this thing escalates to, you know, to some potential violence, this is something I have to be really careful about, because it's not only that some, you know, violence could be directed at me just because of the nature of my profession, but also now because of my ethnicity, it could be even, you know, more so an issue. Nothing became of it, I will say. I was very fortunate, but it did cross my mind. And actually, I had to, you know, have a talk with my family, my two sons and my wife, and it just, you know, being extra vigilant and careful, aware of your surroundings and all. It came, and so where that ended was my boys and I play trumpet. I started up again after my oldest started. And so we made it a tradition of playing taps at, you know, Memorial Day or on Veterans Day. And so the community always really loved it doing that. And so it was May's Memorial Day. They called me and says, you know, Tommy, you're going to do it with your sons, right? And I go, are you sure that you want us to do it, you know? And he goes, well, what do you mean, you know? And he goes, well, you know, I've been in the headlines here a little bit. Oh, no, 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 no. And this is actually a fairly conservative group, you know, community and all. No, no, no. You know, we're counting on you. And I said, okay, sure, I'll do it then. You know, we'll do it. And so we showed up that morning and kind of looking around, you know, because it's a large, you know, a lot of people are there. And we play our taps at the end of the event. And, you know, people come up to you and they thank you and everything. And so this elderly lady comes up to me and she goes, I'm so-and-so. And she said, I'm the one that, you know, made that comment about the Chinese Communist Party. And she goes, you know, I just really want to apologize. And, you know, it kind of got the best of me and everything. And so, you know, I wrote a letter to the Senate Judiciary about this experience. And I ended on that note. And I said, you know, there is hope for our republic after all. You know, once we come to terms of, you know, our actions and reflecting on our actions and all.
Hello, I'm Eric Fay, Director of Elections in St. Louis County, Missouri. And you're listening to High Turnout, Wide Margins, a podcast where we explore local election administration.
So Tommy, I know that you've been at a couple different election offices, especially in California, so Stanislaus and San Luis Obispo. Can you give us a quick rundown of how you ended up in Contra Costa County and some of the work that you're doing now?
So Contra Costa had an opening for chief deputy here, and I was having this big guilt trip during COVID because my folks are in Northern California, and we couldn't even visit them because of COVID and all. And so I was having this real guilt trip of not being able to see my folks who are still around. And so by, you know, relocating back to the Bay Area, I'd be a lot closer to be able to see them. And Contra Costa is a much larger county with, you know, 700,000 registered voters. It's a much more robust operation. And so, you know, it was really kind of like a step up for me. And I think at my time in my career now that for me to perform a role more as a advisor to the, you know, to the group, as a mentor for the next generation and all, it really kind of made me feel that this is a good move to have. And so that's exactly what has happened. It's given me the opportunity to really kind of think outside of the box. I joke, you know, to look up and smell the roses, because we were in such a small office in San Luis Obispo that we were doing everything. My nose was to the grindstone. I had to do all kinds of additional things just with our very small group. But you're at a point where you can only take on so much more. And I just realized that it wasn't going to be sustainable. That job wasn't going to be sustainable for at my point in my career. And so where Contra Costa, I think, was going to give me that opportunity. Sure enough, it has. And what it's been able to enable me to do is to find out more of what's going on, you know, nationwide, what's going on more, you know, across the state of California, what's happening across the nation, and to really be able to interface with other election officials is just a really perfect timing for my time in my career right now to be able to really interface with them and to, you know, leave that lasting mark on my career. Not that I'm looking at retiring anytime soon.
I know we did want to talk about Bay Area votes, and so I'll let Brianna key up that next point.
The reason why I wanted to talk about it, and it did, I was going back through Election Center Awards, and I did notice that it won the Election Center Award last year, the Democracy Award. The importance of working collaboratively in order to serve voters, not just to make sure that the offices are doing everything efficiently, but to make sure that voters have a good opportunity to get accurate information. So can you talk a little bit about Bay Area votes and what it is and how it came to be?
Yes. You know, so hearkening back to, you know, that 2020 election and, you know, seeing that there's really a need for building public trust in elections, I've never experienced that type of situation before in all of the years I was in elections. You know, you would have observers and who would come and observe. Generally, when they leave, they're satisfied observing what they observe. And what you said, sorry about the train. I'll give it a second here. But yeah, it was a real concern for me, and it was something I was recognizing, something I was stating to our Board of Supervisors in San Luis Obispo, that there is this real need for outreach and education and all of that to really build the trust in the process. You know, it really has become a crisis in the United States of being able to, what do we need to do to advocate for our profession and to explain all of the things that we do, recognizing that the public actually knows very little about what we do and can be victimized to the mis and disinformation, as we had seen, as we are seeing today. It's very easy to just plant the seed of some doubtful idea about the elections, which is totally, you know, not true. And so I came to Contra Costa with that thought in mind, number one. You know, is there some way I can help contribute in that way? And then secondarily, you know, once I landed here, you know, waking up early in the morning, well, what news station am I going to watch? You know, in the Bay Area, there's multiple stations that you could watch. And so that was my genesis of an idea. Why don't we band together and try to find a way that we can take advantage of this? Because whether we're talking to one station or another station, it's going to get broadcast across the entire Bay Area. And why, at the same time, why don't we pool our collective thoughts together, and maybe in concert, we can actually come up with a campaign of what are the things that we feel we need to educate the public about. And so we started off with that. And so it really became this collaboration, talking about, you know, we have this situation with this particular member of the public that, you know, has this issue. And so let's break this down into, you know, bite-sized chunks and figure out, you know, what is it about vote-by-mail voting that someone has questions about? What are the things that we should talk about, the process of vote-by-mail voting that we should let the public know about, that they may have never known about? What about our voting systems? What are, you know, we need to create our own narrative to be able to get out there in the public, because otherwise, if we're not saying anything, then anyone can say whatever they want to the public and make them believe it.
So I know we're talking about Bay Area votes. What are you all looking at heading into this 2024 election cycle? And what would you give as advice to other counties across the country that are trying to do some of the same work?
I should back up. November's election, what we decided we would do is you know, like we'd have all these fact sheets and they were kind of long and that sort of, you know, and lengthy and, you know, who's going to be reading that entire fact sheet? So instead, we decided that we were going to break it up in bite-sized chunks on social media, and we did this "Did you know" campaign. So, did you know this about your vote by mail voting? Did you know this about your voting system? Now we're taking a step back and saying, okay, what do we want to do for 2024? And that was the whole thing. Was 2022? We recognized was just a dress rehearsal for the real show in 2024. In talking with media and with communication teams now, it's like, you know, how do you plant a story? How can you get a story covered? So we're learning more about those type of strategies that I didn't necessarily know 2 years ago. And so that's making us stronger and stronger in that way. And we came up with these different campaigns that we're working on now. And it's like, how do I know that my vote was counted accurately? You know, it's the type of question that the public is going to have. Responding to that question, the question has to come from the public. In other words, we're not going to say, here's all the things about vote by mail voting. We have to think of the question that the voter is going to have. How do I know that my vote by mail ballot is going to be counted? How do I know it's trustworthy, so to speak? And so it's trying to approach it in that manner. So we have four topics that we plan to tackle, including, crossover voting, number one, crossover voting. So what's going to be the options for voters who are given the opportunity, meaning they're unaffiliated with a political party, meaning there are no party preference, so to speak, in California, or a party that's not recognized by the Secretary of State's office. And they're given the opportunity to vote on a party's ballot that is allowing them to cross over. And it's ever more important now in California because this is the first presidential primary partisan ballot that we're going to send a ballot to every registered voter. You know, the first time we did this was the 2020 general election. So it was a general ballot in every election since then. So this is the first time that it's going to be, you know, a partisan ballot that we're going to be sending the ballot. We want to get the right ballot into the hands of the voter from the get-go. Another one is, why does it take so long to certify the election or to count the ballots? Why does it take so long? Another question is, how do you prevent voter fraud? That's something that we get asked that all the time. So let's really think, break this down and find a way that we can you know, communicate some real talking points that will resonate in them. That's the other piece is, what is it? What's the wording that we can use? What's the answer that we can provide that will resonate in our public's mind? Not in an election official's mind, but in the public's mind. What's the type of wording that we can, how we can communicate our answer that they will clearly understand and say, oh, I get that now. Last one is, how do I know that my votes were counted? So again, explaining, though, that is going to take pieces out of the vote by mail section. It's going to take pieces out of the voting systems and kind of distilling it so that it's only hitting on the high points of the messaging, you know, of those resonating messages that we hope that can address the concern that they have.
I have no idea how we're going to condense this episode because, like, everything was relevant and interesting. Yeah. You've been listening to High Turnout, Wide Margins, a podcast that explores local election administration. I'm your host, Eric Fay, alongside Brianna Lennon. A big thanks to KBIA for making this podcast possible. Our managing editor is Rebecca Smith. Our managing producer is Aaron Hay. This has been High Turnout, Wide Margins, and thanks for listening.